Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Part of the topic we've been discussing today is safety at ballparks. Years ago at Medler Field at Lebrano Park, they extended the screen from behind home plate to completely cover all the stands to the edge of the dugout. I mean, a wide swath. When they did it, I liked it. Saw too many balls and also bats fly into the stands. Didn't like it. Always was worried, especially at a minor league game. At a minor league game, look, I know that, for example, at a major league game, you've got people who are, you know, they're on their cell phone. They're talking to the person next to them and so forth. Minor league game, it's even more social than that. I mean, people that run minor league baseball will tell you that the game, in a lot of ways, is a secondary thing. It's part of, it's not the centerpiece of what's going on. The only baseball game I ever went to, ever, where everybody was locked on the game, and I'm telling you, there was nobody at the concession stand. Nobody at all, because the game meant everything, was when I went to the World Series. Nobody got up. Nobody moved. Everybody watched the game. But a regular season game isn't like that, and in minor league baseball, even more so. And I'm not saying this woman wasn't paying attention. There's no way she could have. She probably couldn't even react to what happened. It happened, boom, so fast that she was so close to the field. Well, she's been upgraded to fair condition, but it was an awful scene. So that's what we've been talking about today. We had Jason Dombach on in the previous half hour. We now bring in the head baseball coach of the Nittany Lions, Rob Cooper. Coop, welcome back. It's great to hear you.
Steve, how you doing, man?
Doing well. I know there have been a couple of base coaches I've talked to. And, of course, now base coaches have to wear helmets after what happened in Oklahoma a couple of years ago. But they've always told me that they're not all that concerned about themselves because they're engaged in the game. They've always been concerned about the fans because with cell phones and so forth and people looking at phones, checking scores, updates, texting and so forth, that they're not paying attention to the game. What's been your viewpoint on this as you've gone through on fan safety?
Well, you know, it's funny that you're talking about this today, and you know, it's something that definitely I'm aware of. And actually, in 2013, when I was coaching the USA team, we were probably about 5 days before we left to go to Taiwan. We're in that final week picking the team in L.A., and we're playing, you know, split squad games, and we're at Long Beach State, and it's where, you know, it's where Long Beach of 49ers are, you know, the dirtbags for baseball play, and
right.
And their stands are really close to the field, just like you're saying. And one of our guys is up, and you know, and it's just like you're saying. This we have a kid on the kid who made the team was a kid named Kel Johnson. He plays outfield now for Georgia Tech.
Yep.
And his sister and mom were watching the game. The sister turned to talk to the mom, and fastball down the middle, and the guy at the plate, left-handed, was late on the swing, and, I mean, he fouled it straight, and she never saw it. I mean, never saw it, and she lost her eye, and it was her sight, and it was, I mean, it was the worst thing I've ever seen at a ballpark. I mean, it was awful, and the kid that hit it, he ended up making the team, too, and, I mean, he couldn't have felt worse, so it's definitely something that I think just over time you're going to see more and more things added at ballparks to make it safer. Because, you know, again, it's with people paying attention to phones and they're trying to make games more interactive during games for kids and for families and for the people that, you know, the non-baseball fans, they're kind of locked in every pitch. I just think that you're going to see more and more things done.
You're very detail-oriented about your team to begin with. How good was it to walk in there and actually see how far the netting extended where it goes to the end of the dugout?
Well, I mean, it was something that I picked up right away. I mean, it's like you said, I heard part of the show earlier where you were talking about when you went to that game and, you know, you're sitting there up on the rail, and although they're unbelievable seats until the game starts, and then you get kind of like nervous, like, yeah. And don't hit a ball over here. And I think it just makes for the impact of the game better. It makes, you know, or the watching, the enjoyment, you know, and thank goodness the woman, you know, that got hurt in Boston is going to be okay. But, you know, I mean, for anybody that was there and heard that, I mean, you know, they talk about it being a silent stadium and hearing her scream throughout the stadium. And that's just, you know, if that's your first experience at a baseball game, boy, that's tough to want to go back.
Yeah. And it was just by complete quote luck. Okay, in quotes, that you got tickets to the game. You said, "Well, I'll take my son. This will be fun tonight." She had no idea that the seats were going to be up front, or near the front, and then it happened. So, other items to talk about: Major League Baseball draft round one plus compensatory picks last night, and then rounds 3 through 10 are taking place right now, and then 11 through 40 tomorrow. It's not a deep draft, Coop, but there's certain areas in the early rounds where you can clean up on arms. Give us an idea on the first few picks in the draft and the kind of players that they are on the college level that could maybe translate in upward mobility in the minors.
Well, I think, first of all, if for those of you who go back and kind of look at especially the first 10 picks, you know, the first two guys off the board were college shortstops.
Right.
You know, there was a good run on college players last night early, and, you know, I think, again, it speaks to the strength of college baseball and developing guys and the experience guys can have, getting stronger, getting more experience under their belt. You know, like the Pirates, for example, they took a shortstop last year, a high school shortstop, and they took a shortstop again from Arizona this year.
Right.
The great thing about taking like guys like that, they're usually, you know, obviously they're good athletes, and their athleticism, because they can throw, they can run, and they can hit, you know, now you can play them. They're not locked into one position. You know, they can play, you can move a guy to a left field or a third base, depending on how his frame fills out, or second base, and be an offensive second baseman. So, you know, it's, I think you saw a lot of that, and then I saw some, you know, some college arms early, and then selfishly I saw, you know, Brady Aiken, who was the number one pick in the draft last year for the overall by the Astros, and they failed to sign him, and you know, he was our guy that beat Japan in the gold medal game, and for Team USA, he was drafted last night in the first round, so selfishly I was very excited for him and his family to see him, you know, get picked back up in the first round. I think the Indians got themselves a serious steal there.
He had Tommy John in March, right?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. But, you know, the thing that a lot of people don't mention is the fact that, you know, when he was drafted last year, he was 17 years old.
Right.
So this year he's 18 right now. And, you know, that you never want to see anybody get hurt, but that's just the way baseball, college baseball, professional baseball is now. I mean, guys have arm surgeries. They have arm issues. I mean, it's, and you know, Steve, I'm not 100%, you know, on this, because obviously it's not my complete expertise, but, you know, for the longest time, especially when you and I were growing up, it was like, hey, just don't throw curveballs. And I still won't let my two boys throw curveballs. They're just too young for it, but it's just the amount of throwing that kids are doing at young ages now. You know, I shouldn't say throwing, pitching, high impact pitching. You know, I think even if you went out and you threw 100, you know, fastballs every single day, you know, or as much pitching as guys do without pitch counts and stuff, I think that it would impact their arms as well. So it's not even so much guys throwing breaking balls at such a young age. It's just the overall, wear and tear on the arm and high intensity that it's being done at.
It was also a draft where the Giants, for example, took Chris Shaw, the first baseman from Boston College. Along the way, you also had Ian Happ out of the University of Cincinnati, who was the 9th overall pick in the draft. He ended up going to the Chicago Cubs. Those are two northern-based schools. And then, of course, then the 6th overall pick is someone you know really well, and that's Tyler Jay out of the University of Illinois. What does that tell you about north of the Mason-Dixon line maybe getting a little bit more notice on developing players?
Well, I think it shows you that there's really, really good athletes, really good baseball players, you know, and they're not all in California and they're not all in Florida and Texas. They're all over the country. And, you know, the Ian Happ from the University of Cincinnati, I mean, but, you know, just to even bring it closer to home, and I'm going to say this, and then I want to make sure all the people know that I was the head coach of Wright State when he was being recruited, but Ian Happ's a Pittsburgh kid.
Yep.
And, you know, so it just shows you that there's really good talent in the northern part, and like we've talked about, especially in Pennsylvania. You know, and Tyler J, you know, Tyler J, there's a, you know, I thought last year he was a guy. And again, I think he's a guy to keep an eye on this summer. Depending on what they need throughout the year, the Twins, he could end up being a guy that gets in the big leagues late like Finnegan did for the Royals last year.
Yeah, and we've seen that before where guys get in there. And by the way, Plummer is the kid that was taken by the Cardinals in the opening round. High school player, thus no shot at State College unless they're thinking about bringing him here a year from now. So,
correct.
Yeah, that's the general rule is if you're a college-drafted player, the New York Penn League in all likelihood is your starting point. All right, College World Series, Virginia, Arkansas, Miami, Florida, LSU, Vanderbilt, Cal State Fullerton, TCU.
College World Series of death, man.
Yeah, it's something else, isn't it? I mean, this has been quite a tournament so far.
Yeah, it's been a great postseason to watch. I mean, you've had some unbelievably intense games. I mean, that TCU-Texas A&M game last night, 16 innings.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say that TCU played a bunch of extra inning games, and you know, selfishly for all of the people, baseball fans out there, and you know, within earshot, you know, we've got TCU, so we're going to have a College World Series participant, TCU, here at Medlar next year, that first weekend in May. So it's you know, I tweeted this out the other day. There's three teams in the Super Regional that are on our schedule next year, with Illinois, Maryland, and TCU. But it's going to be a heck of a College World Series, you know, you've got some of the best in the country there, and names that you've seen before, it'll be a heck of an event in Omaha, that's for sure.
Well, it was Dansby Swanson was able to, you know, be involved in the game winner for Vanderbilt beating Illinois. Fullerton needed 11 to beat Louisville. TCU needed 16 to beat Texas A&M.
How about the day for Dansby Swanson? That's the day he'll never forget. Hit a home run, win the game to go to Omaha, and then be the number one overall pick in the draft about 20 minutes later. That's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. by the way, when it gets rolling at the end of this week, Arkansas will play Virginia at 3, and that will be on, That's Saturday. Florida will take on Miami. That's the 8 o'clock game on Saturday. LSU-TCU Sunday at 3. Vandy against Cal State Fullerton will be at 8. So that's how the opening weekend will run. For you, Penn State has been in another lifetime to the College World Series before. For you, what, you know, on your goal list, where is that?
It is, I said that in my life, you know, my life goal is winning a gold medal was the number one thing from a professional in a baseball and a, you know, kind of a USA standpoint. But there's nothing more from a professional standpoint that I want to do than to be a part of a Penn State team that gets back to Omaha. And, you know, it's something that we've been talking about since we got the job here, because I truly believe we have the ingredients necessary and the things necessary here, the people, the facilities, and the recruiting, you know, the fertile grounds of recruiting that we can do that in. And you know, the thing I look at is, you look at, you know, Jim Schlossnagel at TCU. He and I are really good friends. We coached together at Tulane. You know, he didn't go to the College World Series in his first 4 or 5 years there. And, you know, it takes time to build it. And, you know, it's the same thing with Vanderbilt. You know, Tim Corbin didn't go to, you know, the World Series at Vanderbilt the first 2 or 3, 4 years he was there. Same thing with Brian O'Connor at Virginia. So, obviously, you know, we want to get it done, but, you know, that's our goal. And I truly believe that we can do it, and it's something that we're going to continue to build on. But to answer your question, it's the number one thing in our minds as far as what we want to do as a coaching staff and as a program.
Coop, thanks so much. Appreciate the time on a variety of topics today.
Hey, no problem. And let me know, you know, next week once it gets going. Love to jump back on with you.
Oh, yeah. We'd love to have you back on. You can count on it. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks, buddy.
Rob Cooper, head baseball coach, Penn State. Well, I'm back on to talk about the College World Series next week. Kevin Herr's complete analysis of all the interviews today, as only he can, in a moment, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried-and-true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915. Well, they actually began at 3:09 today, but that's okay. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Kevin Herr, Clam Bake, otherwise known as the Steve Jones Show. It's just our way of incorporating Kevin's name in the show somewhere.
A.K.A. Steve Jones Show.
Yes. Here are all the new rules in college basketball, most of which I agree with. All right. We all know the shot clock's the big one, 35 down to 30 seconds. All right. And the expanded arc from 3 feet to 4 feet. So far, so good. If a player fakes a foul, say, for example, they go to the replay, and they're checking to see if it's a flagrant foul. And they look at it, and all of a sudden it looks like suddenly you're in the running to beat out Brad Pitt for an Academy Award. Right? We're going to call the foul on you. So if they sit there, they go, hold on a second here. What is this deal? So that's what they're doing with that. They can also go to the replay anytime now for a shot clock violation. They were not allowed to go to the review before last year at all. Shot clock violations were not reviewable in college basketball. That's the Nigel Hayes play in the Final Four, where he clearly shot the ball after the shot clock went off. Let's see. The timeouts. The coach cannot call a timeout when the ball is live. It has to be called by the player. I'm in favor of that. That's fine. Adjusting the media timeouts. At 16, 12, 8, and 4, first dead ball under each one, you get a media timeout. If a coach calls his own timeout within 30 seconds of that, say, for example, there's 12 minutes and 22 seconds to go in the second half, and we're in trouble here, I need a timeout. Well, if you'd done that, you would have had timeout probably at 12:22, and then the first dead ball probably at 11:48, and you'd have essentially back-to-back timeouts. That now changes. If you call that timeout at 12:22, and even though you've called a 30-second timeout, it automatically becomes a media timeout at that point, and you lose your timeout, but that's when they'll take the media timeout. It'll speed the game up. So you won't have back-to-back timeouts. 10 seconds to bring the ball up the court. You go up, there's 8 seconds to go, and you call timeout because you're trapped, you're in trouble, whatever. It used to be, I get a fresh 10 seconds. What? Well, not anymore. You've got 10 seconds. You call timeout with 8, you got 2 to get the ball over the line. Let's see. Reducing the amount of time for a disqualified player from 20 to 15 seconds. Whoop-de-doo. Nobody really keeps track of that. A lally gag coming out of timeouts anyway. And the 5 second closely guarded thing, which I just thought was, has been absurd to watch for years. Official, 1,001, 1,002, guy backs off. Okay. Comes a little closer. 1,001, 1,002. You got a shot clock, okay? You only got 35 seconds. Now you got 30. Now you got 30 seconds. Okay? It's one less thing for the official to stand out there and do. Watch for fouls. Watch for if the ball goes out of bounds. Watch where a foot steps, something. But don't be standing at a count of 1,001, 1,000, where it's subjective as to what you think is closely guarded. I've actually had people say, huh, I'm really sorry to see that rule go. I looked at them and I go, I look at them like they're insane. Are you kidding me? 5,000 things to take care of the court. An official judging whether you're closely guarded or not is not one of them. What, you gotta give up your season tickets now? Really? All good rules. Oh, you can dunk a pregame warm-up now, too.
Dumbest rule ever. Why not? Who cares? It's pregame warm-up.
Especially with, before collapsible rims, I would agree with that. Before collapsible rims, I could see why you wouldn't want it. But now that you have collapsible rims and they pop into the same spot, it's not an issue. Before collapsible rims, yeah. I could see why they didn't want you doing it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Relevant Wednesday?
I didn't know there was titles for the show now.
Well, every show here is relevant.
Themes, I should say. Not necessarily titles. Themes.
I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15, Humble's Wharf, where Kevin's driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
This week, I've been driving and talking about the 2015 Ford C-Max Energy. And the C-Max you've heard a lot about because it is an electric car, but this version is not only electric, it also has a hybrid engine. So what happens is you can run on the electric that you've charged up on the electric battery. Then when that's used up, you can switch over to the hybrid, which works like any hybrid, has a battery, an EV option, and has a gas option. Gas mileage on the sticker is 88 miles to the gallon. That's what the equivalent is when you throw all three options available. Now, the early days of hybrids, you probably remember not too many features because, you know, it was mostly you were buying a hybrid to save money on gas. Well, now you're going to get HD radio, of course, power windows and locks, the panoramic moonroof, plus the 8-inch screen with backup camera and sensors all the way around in the SEL model. Find out more about the Ford C-Max all this week, and you can see it on my Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin Herr or check it out in person at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury or sunburymotors.com.
All right. A couple notes for you. Game 3 of the finals tonight with Golden State taking on Cleveland. Cavaliers in overtime won game 2 after the Warriors won game 1 in overtime. And now the series shifts to Cleveland. The Cavs are 6-1 at home this year in the playoffs. LeBron James has been remarkable so far carrying that cast, and Steph Curry has struggled from the field. Not sure he's been quite right, regardless of what he says, since he took that bad fall against Memphis. Stanley Cup Finals resume tomorrow night. Chicago at home with Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay did something last night. Down 2-1, scored 34 seconds later, tied it up, and then won the game on Paquette's goal in the third period. They won it 3-2, lead the series 2-1. History is absolutely on Tampa Bay's side. In the history of the Stanley Cup Final, when it's been 1-1 and the road team has won Game 3, it's happened 13 previous times. Those teams are 13-0 in completing the mission. So history's on their side, but we'll see. Game 4 comes up tomorrow night in Chicago. Every series takes on its own personality. the Phillies lost to the Reds last night. It's the first time in Cole Hamels' career he's ever lost to the Reds. I didn't realize that. First time. Pirates lost last night to the Brewers in a rain-shortened game last night. Orioles play the Red Sox at Camden Yards tonight. Yankees are at home with the Nationals with Bryce Harper in town. Yeah, let's see. And the Mets. Where are the Mets? Mets are at home with the Giants tonight. Off day for the World Cup. For the United States, obviously. It's, you know, I mean, you know, Spain's 1-1 right now, and Mexico's playing Colombia, and France is going to play England later. It is amazing. I just bring this up as a topic of contrast. We know what a hot topic on the show Ray Rice was, correct? What a hot topic Greg Hardy was, domestic violence, correct? What a hot topic Ray McDonald was and then getting released by the Bears in a most recent incident 2 weeks ago. Why is it then that it's not a hot topic that Hope Solo is playing goalie right now for the United States?
It's been talked about, but I don't think nearly like what you're comparing it to. And is it because there has been no precedent set here? I mean, in this particular sport anyway? That we know of?
I'm just asking the question. Is it because it's a woman? Is it because it's women's soccer? I don't know. But she doesn't exactly have a white sheet of paper that's clean. What the circumstances are, I don't know. But I know it has not been talked about. She played very well, by the way, against Australia. I watched some of it last night. She played very well. She had some big saves in that game. I mean, she is outstanding at what she does. I'm just saying, I think it's interesting. I'm asking, is there a double standard here? Is there a double standard? To ESPN's credit and outside the lines, they have followed it. Fox has not. And Fox's coverage of the World Cup's been very good, but they have not followed it. ESPN has. You see, ESPN lost the British Open starting in 2017. These are not short contracts anymore. This is another 12-year contract to carry the, starting in 2017, the British Open, the Senior Men's British Open, and the Women's British Open. And NBC will get that. Ratings up for the NBA Finals up to 12.9, way up from a year ago. 10.3 was the Game 2 rating number last year on the Spurs of the Heat. Slightly down the Belmont. I wonder if, with everybody poured into California Chrome last year, which got a 12.9 rating, but here we go again, and it fell to 12.3, which was unusual. But it did lead to a strong Stanley Cup 4.8 on Saturday night.
You know, you said that earlier. That was the first thing I thought about. How many times in my lifetime alone we have been at the first two and then the third one let us, and then the third one, quote unquote, let us down. And I wonder if maybe that was the feeling again for some people.
And by the way, IndyCar stayed level at its usual 0.1.
Hey, that's great. It's always good when you're not dropping.
0.1. How far can you fall?
Well, you could go to zero.
Well, that would mean that they wouldn't be talking to you.
Nobody asked me if I watched it. I would have happily given them a few shares there.
You didn't watch it live.
No, I didn't watch it live. No, you're right. I didn't watch it live. I watched it on delay till about midnight.
You don't count.
See, why doesn't that count? You're still watching it.
You can't, because it's very hard to meter somebody watching a tape.
Digital copy.
Whatever. I'm saying, you could record it and have it sit there and never watch it. Right?
That's not going to happen.
Do you see my point? Instead of taking
the
show,
I do see your point. I do see your point.
Instead of taking the show and careening it into a canyon, do you see my point?
I do see your point.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yes.
Okay.
And no,
there may be a possibility you don't watch it.
You say really a 0.1? Because last year I thought it was like a 0.3.
I don't know. I made that number.
All right, that's more like it. Thank you. I mean, it's not. It's viable. I mean, I'm not going to say it's not, but last year's Firestone 600 was like a 0.3.
Let's see if there's even a story on it.
Somebody somewhere has to know.
Flat ratings, flat viewership up slightly for IndyCar opener.
Yeah, I saw that. That's a long time ago.
Okay, North America, 7 days ago. IndyCar, Detroit, looks like it was slightly higher.
Really, Detroit? And that was a shortened race because of weather. Lightning, actually.
Yeah, that's about the only excitement.
You know, I saw something, and I'd love to hear from anybody that was at the Pocono race this past weekend. While I was watching... and I did not see the whole thing. I saw the last probably about 20 laps.
It went down from a 0.8 to a 0.7.
Wow, 0.7. That's actually really good for a Saturday night race.
Repeating once again, it's down from last year.
Again, that's really good for a Saturday night race.
Dover on NASCAR on Fox Sports 1, 2.3. Last year, that race was on Fox over the air, got a 3.3.
Well, the Pocono race was on Fox Sports 1, but I was watching probably the last 20 laps. And you know, it's hard to judge because racing is one of those sports when you watch fan interest, people are in and out and, you know, going through different events, you know, getting in and out of the stands, going into the infield during the race. So it's hard to judge, but it looked to me.
So you're saying they're bored.
Maybe. No, there's just a lot of stuff to do. It looked to me as if the race hadn't been as well attended as maybe 5 years ago when you barely saw an empty seat.
Racing's down everywhere.
I'm just curious to see if that was the view from anybody that was actually at the race.
I saw lots of empty seats at the Indy 500.
Yeah, there were some, especially on the turn 3-4 section in the short shoot.
Yeah, they're pretty spread out in the main area too. Let's see, Indy 6-1. Let's see, I don't think we have this week. Do we have this weekend? IndyCar Detroit mixed. ABC NASCAR ratings roundup Xfinity Series at 6-1. That was a week ago. We'll have to wait for that. French Open dropped on NBC a bit. But, you know, these are the TV ratings. USA Today, 10 best stadiums in college football. Beaver Stadium checks in at number 7. Number 1 is the Rose Bowl, where UCLA plays.
Why do you suppose that is? What do they take into consideration, do you know?
Have you ever been there?
No, never.
Oh, it is really, really cool, I got to admit. When you are sitting in that box... You're looking out, first of all, the stadium all the way around, you know, it's a true bowl. And you look out at the San Gabriels out over the rim of the stadium, and it's just, it really is a great place. And it's a great place to broadcast a game, the whole thing. I think it's tremendous. When U2 played the Rose Bowl in 2009, during the sound check, Bono looked out and he said, God, I love this place.
That's interesting.
To its credit, it is a great setting and a great place. And they take the field thing really seriously there. They put in new fields for games. They have LSU Tiger Stadium number 2. I have never been there. I've never been to Baton Rouge. I mean, I've been to Louisiana a number of times, but I've never been to Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge.
And they say a night game there or something else. Ohio Stadium at Ohio State. They put a lot of money into this place. And to renovate it, and they did a great job renovating it. And it is fabulous. Michigan Stadium was number 4. And the renovations that they did there are really good, but there is no way Michigan Stadium is better than Beaver Stadium. It's not, I mean, the fan base is not as passionate. There are a lot of things about it that are... It's not worthy of a number 4.
You know, I think we talked about this before, and you disagreed, but when I did not see a game there. I did stop by when the stadium was empty. It just seemed as though you were miles away from the field. And maybe it was just the perspective with an empty stadium. I don't know.
No, not really. No, you know, it's...
Because that's a bowl, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bowl. You're about the same. It's not that bad. That's not bad.
See, that's the one thing I always really appreciated about Beaver Stadium. When they built the upper decks, they built them up and at an angle that it doesn't feel like you're further away from the field.
Right.
And you actually get some of the... I mean, if you're a football fan, and I'm talking about the science of the game, those end zone seats... and in the club section are the best place to watch a game because you can see really everything develop the way that's set up.
Yeah, those are great seats.
It's like watching the All-22 camera, you know?
Right. They have Memorial Stadium at Clemson, number 5. I've never been there for a game. I've walked on the field. I've walked in the stadium. I've looked around. Looks like a really cool place.
Did you touch the rock?
No, I didn't touch the rock.
Just wondered.
The Swamp is number 6 at Florida. Same story there. Dick and I walked in, walked around, walked in the field, looked around. Like, yeah, it looked pretty cool. It was fine. Beaver Stadium, 7. I may have been there once or twice.
Maybe.
Sanford Stadium at Georgia, between the hedges, is number 8. Lane Stadium, Virginia Tech, is number 9. Same story with that one, too. I've walked in the field there, but I've never seen a game there. And Camp Randall at Madison. When they do the jump thing at the end of the third quarter and the press box
starts
to
jump thing?
Oh, yeah. They do. They play, the band plays Jump.
Oh, okay.
Jump around.
Jump around, yeah.
Jack looked at me and he says, is this press box safe? I looked at him. I said, Jack, I'm an announcer, not an engineer. I don't know.
Now, I know why the hedges are there, and you know I know they always say Georgia between the hedges. Why are the hedges there? What's the history between that? Do you know? I mean, is that the way the original stadium was built between two hedgerows? I just wondered.
Well, it's the same thing with Bryant Denny Stadium. Bryant Denny Stadium has hedges too. People don't realize it. And I think part of that was to keep you from running out in the stands onto the field. How are you gonna get out there? You gonna hurdle them? I don't think so. Between the hedges at Chicolemy.
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
We'll start with a hedge. See how it goes. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Jump around. Jump around. Take
do that at the end of the third quarter at Wisconsin, and the, you know, especially if it's a night game, the place shakes. Eey. Now, not so much when you're there doing a game on Thanksgiving weekend, where the students just, they aren't there. But Camp Randall's a great place to see a game. Ohio Stadium's a good place to see a game. Michigan Stadium, yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not really, I've never quite bought into that hype too much. I think Michigan Stadium is good. It's got a great tradition. I like that. You know, I mean, that stadium goes back to 1927. I mean, Fielding Yost helped design the place. That's one thing you do find. There's a lot of great traditional stadiums in this conference, even Illinois. You can talk about Illinois not having any fans at their games, but the facility, I mean, it goes back to Red Grange. They've updated it, modernized it, and so forth. You know, but, you know, Beaver Stadium is a 55-year-old stadium. Michigan Stadium goes back to the 27. There's the basics of Ohio Stadium, even though they've renovated it, that go back decades. I mean, Nebraska Stadium goes back into the 50s, in fact. Which is, that's a nice stadium too. I like the stadium in Lincoln very much. I mean, so you have some great traditional stadiums in this conference. Kinnick Stadium goes back. You know, a lot of basics about Kinnick Stadium. It's a very basic place, but again, same thing. You know, you feel like it's a, you know, a great tradition there. Minnesota Stadium's brand new, and I'll tell you right now, they thought of everything in that stadium. There isn't anything in that stadium they didn't think about. I mean, everything from the concourse, how it's laid out, to placement of bathrooms, to placement of concession stands, to how the locker room is done, to the entrance the teams get there. I mean, everything. They've thought about everything in that stadium. How they've done the press box. A lot of press boxes today, for example, you'll have a TV placed in the box, but they put it up above your head. So there are times where Jack wants to look at a replay, and he's got to turn around and look up at there. Well, Minnesota has the same thing, except they also have a monitor for each announcer at the table in front of them. Now, that's a little thing, but to us doing the game, it's a big thing.
I'd love to have that on a regular basis.
Are you sure?
I have it 50% of the time.
And when you do, what do you think?
I think I sound much better at that point. I want a telestrator next, though, for Patriot League All Access.
Do you call a game off the monitor?
No, but I like to watch it for replays.